You're listening to Radio Mayapur with the best devotional, meditation, kirtan music, and inspirational podcast. This is Radio Mayapur.
So this is Ganga Das. Welcome to Shruta Kirti Prabhu, to Radio Mayapur. Today is a beautiful sunny day. Yes. It's getting warm in the day. Night is still cool and we can sleep nicely around 19:20 without fan or AC. And today also this Kirtan Mela started. So there are every half an hour there are different singers who are glorifying the Lord. Mayapur is a very special place, Shruta Kirti Prabhu. Yes. And you know, because you came here with Srila Prabhupada in the very beginning, in 1970, what?
Three.
Well, there was nothing. It was a rice field.
I was in the hut.
And you were in a hut.
I was in the hut.
Cooking potato and all these things. I know it was difficult to eat. So welcome, Shruta Kirti Prabhu.
Thank you.
Give a short introduction. You were born in Philadelphia in June 1951. You are an Italo-American.
Yes.
Means your grandparents, they were Italian from near Foggia and San Severa, which is near Florence. Beautiful place. And you also studied in a college called La Salle.
Yes.
And you joined in 1971. But the important question I want to ask you, what was your life before you joined? Give us a 5 minutes. Just give us a little bit of who you were before. I mean, okay. I know you had a garage and you are a mechanic-oriented person, but tell us a little bit.
My father died when I was three. So that definitely had a big effect on my life. I had two older sisters and, of course, an Italian mother.
Mama.
So I learned caretaking my whole childhood. That's all I saw. I didn't see the man of the house, you know, coming home.
Of course.
Sitting on the couch, drinking, watching TV. I only saw my mother.
Cooking,
cleaning.
Yes.
Taking care.
She teach you everything.
My first guru.
Yes. My mother, including teaching me, is teaching the bottom, because she said, you never know, my son, one day you may be somewhere, you need to stitch a button, so you should know that. Everything she teaches.
Yes.
That's a beautiful mother, Italian mother.
We were poor family, but I never knew I was poor.
Of course.
I was raised, of course, Catholic boy. As I said, I went to a Irish Catholic school.
Whoa.
Irish Catholic nuns, priests.
Nice.
And I was an altar boy. As soon as I was 7 to 8 years old, they picked me right out of the, made me. So I've been ringing bells for a very long time.
Nice.
I was a pujari.
You were close to God already at that time. They could see something special in
you.
I
had to learn Latin, everything.
All the prayers.
And then all through grade school. When I graduated 8th grade, grade school, the pastor would come in and hand out the report cards. So he would ask. He was asking one after another, what do you want to be when you grow
when
up?
You grow up.
So by the time he got to me, he said, what do you want to be when you grow up? I said, the Pope.
Whoa.
I thought
that
I was
nice.
Italian. Popes were Italian.
Yeah,
I thought, why not be the Pope?
The leader of the...
Nice. But I ultimately did better.
Much better than being the Pope. I think Krishna put you in a very special position.
Yes.
Wonderful.
And everything was very kind of simple through grade school, high school, Catholic high school, wearing a suit tie every day. Then college, LaSalle College. I was on a scholarship, a work scholarship, so I had to work a few hours a day. And because I didn't have a father, I didn't have to go to Vietnam. I was called Soul Survivor. I had to carry the family name.
So
that kept me out of the war, which was very good.
Was a boon.
Yeah, that was a boon. But in college, second year in college, first year I was majoring in marketing, accounting, business. And then, you know, you turn 19, everything changed.
Well, you were a sharp boy. At one point you thought, let me experiment with something else.
Yeah, I was experimenting, yes. I was passing out anti-war leaflets on Broad Street in Philadelphia, all just like that, you know, doing a little experimentation. But I came very, very frustrated. Didn't know what I was doing, why I was doing it. And I actually wanted God. I wanted to know God. not philosophically. I literally wanted to feel his presence if he was there. So I started praying. I would go to bed at night, even on the rosary beads. Yeah. I was saying, I'd never done it in my life, but I started. I was very desperate. I tried born-again Christians because they were chanting, and wanted emotion.
Yeah,
that didn't work. And then it was Earth Day 1971. My friend and I, we went to school together at LaSalle. We went to a concert in the park, Fairmount Park. And there on the plateau, called Belmont Plateau, were like a dozen very funny-looking people, all in yellow, dhoti, kurta, saris.
People from another planet, I imagine.
I thought
right?
they were from Mars.
Yeah.
And he kept saying, let's go see them. And I kept saying, no.
No, no, no.
But he, he convinced me. And we went down, and that was it. From the very moment I met the devotees, I was convinced everything they said was true.
Amazing.
They told me God's name, his address, mother's name, father's name. I accepted everything immediately. I had no questions.
But you see, because you were the seeker of the truth. And the truth, when it presented to you as an intelligent boy, you took it and say, okay, this is it.
I guess so, yes. I was literally looking for God, and
He appeared to you.
He appeared to me.
Through the devotees.
Yes, yes.
Amazing.
When Swami Kirtananda, Swami breezed through the temple, we went to the temple every evening after school, and he said, come to New Vrindavan. And after 7 days from meeting the devotees, that's what we did. We shaved our heads, and I started out as a cowherd boy. I was milking cows, baling hay, mending fences. I was on the farm.
Right.
I never even saw a cow. I was 19 years old. I never saw a cow.
Of course.
And now I was seeing them, smelling them, taking
nice
care
experience.
Of them.
Nice experience.
It was very nice, yes, yes. It was nice. That was my beginning.
Wow.
My beginning experiences.
But tell us, how do you meet? Of course, you start chanting and the process of acquiring knowledge, from the scripture and the devotees. But then, what was the first time you saw Srila Prabhupada? Because really amazing happened.
When I was initiated, 3 months to the day, July 22nd, and a few of us, we filled up a van and we drove from New Vrindavan to New York City. It was about 5, 6, 7 hour drive, I guess, because Prabhupada was initiating 10 devotees every day for more than a week, which at that time, that was a lot. You would chant rounds.
On each beads.
We had to string our own japa beads. We had to make our own neck beads just from a craft shop. They weren't Tulsi. There was no Indian stores, nothing like that.
Nothing,
so we did everything on our own. And that was the first time I got to see him.
So what was your impression when you first see him? Magical moment.
Immediately from when you moved into the temple, at that time, all we did was talk about Prabhupada, what he was doing, what he was saying, where he was traveling to at the time. It was everything we did was for him. So the anticipation to meet him was, of course, overwhelming.
Of course.
And it was a small temple room, Henry Street, not so big. You could jam 100
people
into it. So every morning, of course, people came from all over the East Coast and even some from further away, the West Coast. So every day the temple was jam-packed. Every day there was a fire jagya. And my day came. So that's when I really I always got to be next to the Vyasa-san because I was Kirtananda's assistant.
Oh,
he was first sannyasi, practically first initiated devotee. So although I was just a kid, just a little bhakta in New Vrindavan, I got to be right by the Vyasa-san. So I was fortunate from the beginning.
Day one.
Yeah. And the day I was initiated was interesting. It was Kirti Raj, Shruta Shrava, Shruta Dave, Kirti something, and then me. I had both Shruta Kirti. So the secretary called my name, Vin. Come up. So everything we had to, we were meditating, no meat eating, no illicit sex. Because when you saw him, basically you went blank.
Yeah.
Your intelligence was gone. You just froze. It was all awe and reverence. seeing his eyes. Everyone would focus Prabhupada's eyes because they always looked like he was crying. You know, they always looked like diamonds in his eyes because they were always wet. Mm. But he was full of compassion. You know, so many times people had said when they saw Prabhupada, of course, they felt embarrassed, ashamed. He's seeing all my lives, all my sins, all this. But I felt just the opposite. You know, Prabhupada saw devotee. You know, that's devotee. He saw a devotee, everyone he looked at. You know, that's what I learned later on. Wasn't he saw bad, he saw good.
Yeah.
He saw prospects, you know, to serve. So I got called up. You know, we learn, put your left side down, do your dandavats. Then I sat up. And Prabhupada said, what are the regulative principles? And I rattled them off because that's what you did the whole time. Just so you
memorize.
Yeah, you had to memorize because you literally couldn't think. So I said them all, probably quickly. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. And then he said in a little different way, he said, how many rounds do you chant? Which was different from the standard, you have to chant 16 rounds.
Yeah.
And everything he does, you know, which, of course, I've learned over time, there's a reason for
purposeful.
Everything.
Yes.
So in me, my little proud moment, I said, I chant 20 rounds a day, Prabhupada. Yes. And he just kind of looked at me and went, like, yeah, yeah, not impressed. And then he said, so your name is Shrutakirti. And he said, Shrutakirti is a name of Krishna. It means one whose activities are world famous. And of course, everybody in the crowd, they go, ooh.
You know?
And then Prabhupada again looked at me and said, and you are Shrutakirti Das. So he was poking me right away because he could see I was a... Then I went back to my seat. Somebody said, what's your name? I said, I don't know. We had to go after the ceremony. You went outside Prabhupada's room on the door.
Prajumna, the Pino name.
Would put your name and your diacritics, and yes. You would write it down. So, you know, when you went home,
you got a new name.
Yeah, your new name. Yes.
But then you traveled with Srila Prabhupada for many, many years.
Yes.
I mean, you are fortunate because many people, they saw Prabhupada maybe a couple of times or 10 times or 5 times. Some people
none.
Didn't see.
That's right.
The letter they received their Japa Mala initiation because they were busy in the service.
Yes.
In their temple, they were pujari or they were very cook. Yeah. Or so. But you are very fortunate.
Well, you know what I say? Because we all got what we needed.
Of course.
I needed that much.
Of course.
And I still need it.
You know, I mean, from the Pope... You're becoming now the seventh of the most amazing personality in the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
The pure devotee.
Serving God. Prabhupada would say, pure devotee is serving God.
So at which point, Prabhupada, or somebody asked you to become Prabhupada's servant? Something happened.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Yes.
Tell us a story.
Well, then, the next time I saw him was 9 months later in May. 1972, and we drove across country in a van. Again, five or six of us. Took 4 or 5 days in a van to get to California, Los Angeles, New Dwarka, and we went there to get our Brahmin initiation.
Wow.
So again, I'm with Kirtanananda. So I got a very special, I got to go on the morning walks. Because I was with Kirtanananda. Nobody got to go on the morning walks unless you were a sannyasi president like that. But I got to do that every day, and I got to read Krishna book to him in the garden, which was very, very special. It was just 5 or 6 of us in
Privilege.
The garden. And that's when I actually had my beginning of my personal association with Prabhupada. Wow. Because I got to see he was very wonderful. And he was funny.
He was witty.
He was witty.
Yeah.
And he could be sarcastic. And he could... One of the things he did, And I learned he would have you do things without opening his mouth, just by his eyes. He would instruct you just by a look.
Yeah.
Yes. He didn't say, now you can read Krishna. He would just look at the book, look at you, which meant, okay, now read.
Now read.
So he had a way that the fortunately I as a servant, I learned, you know, these ways. And I read this one story. I was actually reading Krishna book in New Vrindavan every day during lunch to the devotees as they ate lunch. And then in the evening in the ashram, I would tell the story that I read for lunch. That was part of Kirtanananda's process. So it was really wonderful. So all of a sudden now I'm in front of Prabhupada with the same Krishna book. And I'm seeing Prabhupada reads his books. You know, that was very... That was an amazing thing to see.
Because he's the author. He's the one who wrote the book. So why is he reading
the book? And he said that, you know, on the plane, Prajumna and I sitting next to him, he was reading his Bhagavad Gita, as it is. And he said, what author do you know reads his own books? He says, once he's finished, he never looks at it again. He goes to his next book. He said, but here I am reading this Bhagavad Gita. Why? And, of course, you don't answer. And then he says, because these are not my words. They're Krishna's words. He said, therefore I'm reading. And every day he read his books. This is what I saw. So there in the garden in the afternoon, I read this one story about a demon. And, you know, there's a half a dozen of us sitting, and we're just sitting listening. But Prabhupada, he's listening in a very different way. And I got to the point where Krishna kills the demon. And Prabhupada started laughing and laughing. And he had a laugh like no one else. Yeah. There were various degrees of laugh. He started laughing. Then his chest
started shaking
and tears coming out of his eyes. And then he starts slapping his knee. In English, we say a knee slapper. That's like the height of... And that's what he did. And that was when I understood what Krishna consciousness was. Before that, it was just work. Chant your rounds, get up early, and work your butt off. That was New Vrindavan. You know, we said we didn't read Bhagavad Gita. We lived Bhagavad Gita, you know. That was our philosophy in New Vrindavan. But then I saw Prabhupada. This is Krishna consciousness. Joyful. Yeah. Joyfully. Happy. Laughing. So I decided the next day... I'm going to find a story about a demon again, because I thought if I pick this story, the same thing is going to happen. And I already knew the story immediately. At the time, I was 19 years old. It was my favorite story. So I picked it.
What story was it?
Vivid Gorilla.
Oh, the gorilla.
What boy did... Because it's got all the gross things that boys like, you know, guys like.
Yeah.
So I'm in there, and I got my bookmarker in there and everything, and I'm just waiting for Prabhupada to give me the look, you know. And sometimes he would talk. Sometimes he'd chant his rounds. And so we did nothing except wait for his, you know...
Direction, what to do. Yeah.
So finally... And my heart's beating, like... Because I had an idea... that he was going to laugh just like he did yesterday, which was pretty presumptuous thing, you know. Anyway, I started reading, and the line came very early. It wasn't when the demon was killed. It was way before that.
Yeah.
And was describing, and I'm reading, and Vivid's behind the bushes and everything, and the fire jug is going on, and he pops out, and he starts passing urine
on
the fire. So I thought that was hysterical, you know. So I'm reading, and I said it. And when I said it, Prabhupada started laughing. And he did exactly like yesterday, laughing, and the tears are coming out. So now everybody's laughing. We're not laughing because of the Krishna book story. No, we're laughing because Prabhupada's laughing. That's why we're laughing. But he was laughing because... He was right. He's just right there. Enters the story, and same thing. And slapping his knee, and laughing, and so that was just, you know, more than I could ever want. And he did exactly what I thought he was going to do, which was also, that was amazing. So then the next day came. Krishna completely took my intelligence away. We come in. Prabhupada, we follow him into the garden. He sits down on his dais. We all offer obeisances and sit up. And I didn't have a story prepared. Oh. I forgot. Because I would have.
Yeah, of course.
And as soon as I sat up, he looked at me and said, "Read." Because he knew what I was up to. He said, "Read." So then I start paging through. And he said, "Anywhere." He said, "Krishna is like a sweet ball. Wherever you bite is sweet." So then I just found the next story and read. But there was no knee slapping or anything. But it was a real revelation to me how Prabhupada was funny. You know, one day he looked at the same group of us. We're all kids. You know, if you were in the movement a year, you were like a senior devotee at that time, you know. So we're sitting there, and I learned right Prabhupada's style. I picked up on it quickly, you know. And he looked at us. He went, "Govindam Hari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami." And he's looking at us, and he said, "What color is Krishna?" And I'm thinking, what kind of a question is that? You know, and I knew right away, this is a trick question. Otherwise, why would he ask such a question? And I thought, Prabhupada's funny. He's tricky. He's always doing something. So, I never tried to answer Prabhupada's questions. I was with him 2.5 years. He would ask a question. I thought, all right, who's the fool going to try to get this right? Because you're never right.
Never right. Whatever you say, it would be opposite. He'll say something.
So one devotee, smart boy, raised his hand, Brahmacharya. Prabhupada, it says in the Krishna book, so he's quoting Shastra, Krishna's blackish. No, blackish black. Like the monsoon rain cloud. And Prabhupada very shook his head, no, you know. He said he's blue like the sky. And then he said the sky is blue because it's reflecting Krishna's bodily effulgence.
Beautiful.
So he showed us how to see, all the time he would show us how to see Krishna. It wasn't something you had to aspire for. You just had to use your intelligence, your common sense. So, you know, I always say, whenever you see the blue sky, that's Krishna.
That's Krishna.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So that was before I was a servant. And then I used to watch his servant, Nanda Kumar, at the time. Hmm. Because, you know, we knew Prabhupada, but you never heard about anybody else. But then I saw he has a servant. And I would watch him. Never imagined being a servant, but I watched him. I thought, he's giving Prabhupada his glasses on the Vyasasan, taking his cane, opening up the Bhagavatam. So I would watch Nanda Kumar. I wasn't even watching Prabhupada. I was watching this most fortunate person. And he looked at me once, Nanda, like, "What are you looking at?" You know, because I'm looking at him. So I thought, who is this weird kid following me around? And so then I stopped doing that. And then we went back to New Vrindavan, and now I was Brahmin initiated. So Kirtananda threw me in the kitchen.
Cook.
And I learned how to cook. And
who taught you how to cook?
Kirtananda. Ah. Kitchenananda, they used to call him. Kitchenananda.
Yeah. He was a good cook?
Yeah, he was a good cook. Yeah, Prabhupada showed him. Yeah, you know.
Prabhupada showed him how to cook.
His specialty, though, was khichdi. You know, khichdi and chapatis. Which was very important because chapatis, Prabhupada ate every day of his life, Prabhupada ate chapatis.
So
if you couldn't make a good chapati,
he wouldn't make it.
He would throw other people, Hari Kesh, he'd throw it like a frisbee, you know, because they were hard.
He said, "What is this? Not chapati." Yeah.
So then Prabhupada came to New Vrindavan in August for the Janmashtami festival. And I'm thinking I'm going to get to spend time with him like I did in Los Angeles. But I didn't get any because it's festival time. I'm in the kitchen.
Busy.
Morning till night. Everybody's up on Govardhan Hill and New Vrindavan. And they'd come, "Did you hear Prabhupada? What a lecture." I'm like, "No." You know, there was no sound systems.
There was not
a recording. I wasn't very happy that I wasn't getting what we all just, you know, would die for, Prabhupada's association. And then the day before he left... The night before he left, literally 10 hours before Prabhupada left, Kirtananda came into the kitchen, 8 o'clock at night, said, "Do you want to be Prabhupada's servant?"
How can you say no?
How can you say no? I just said yes. And that was the beginning of my life.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And you start traveling with him everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to get a passport. And I didn't have to do... Well, I was serving. We were very... There was a secretary, Shama Sundar. So he did all secretarial things. He dealt with the travel. He dealt with the letters, dealt with getting the passports, the visas, making his travel arrangements. I cooked, massaged, and answered the bell. That's what he said to me when I first day I became his servant. He said, when Prabhupada rings the bell, you go in his room. He said, when Prabhupada sits in the car, you sit next to him. When Prabhupada's on the airplane, you sit next to him. And I'm thinking, I can do this.
Easy, easy.
You're scared. Yeah. You know, it's just scary.
Of course.
But at the same time, it's
a great opportunity.
Understanding. And Prabhupada was, he was expert in every situation because I knew nothing. There were no manuals. You know, like now we have a manual for everything. How to chant japa, how to be a GBC, how to be a guru. Everything, we got a manual for it. You know, we have retreats one after the other.
Yeah.
But then we moved into the temple and they just assumed, all right, go out on Sankirtan, do this, clean the temple. You know, you just did
it. You just did it, yeah.
So that's all I was told. So then we went to Pittsburgh the very first day. And literally, no one... I was in Prabhupada's bedroom in Pittsburgh. It was a small temple and just temporary. But Prabhupada's in the sitting room, and I'm sitting in this other his bedroom looking in his suitcase, just trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. And, you know, there's a dhotis, kurtas, a sweater, a chador, and that cooker, you know, which looked like a bomb, Now they would stop you all the time if you went to the airport.
It looked like a bomb.
Yeah, it literally looked like a bomb. So I'm looking at all these things, and I hear a bell ring.
Run.
And I ran. It was my first time. I ran into the... It was afternoon. I offer obeisances, not dandavats. We always just offered obeisances. And I sat up, and Prabhupada's looking at me. And I said...
What can I do?
What can I do?
Yeah.
He said nothing. I just wanted to see how fast you were. So the very first thing he did was make me comfortable by just being funny. He was serious, but it was also funny.
Yeah.
And then we're still just sitting there looking at each other because I don't know what to do next. And I said,
shall I go?
Anything else? He goes, no. I said, should I leave? He said, okay. So then I left. But he took all that anxiety out of me just by being that person that funny, wonderful, sweet person. So that's the person that I knew. You know, I knew the person behind the door, not the person on the Vyasa sign. That was a different person. Yeah. You know, that was his seva. But when he walked out of the temple room, walked up those stairs, he was a devotee, lover of Krishna, you know, and that's what I relished.
Because he was very grave when he gave the lecture. He was very deep. And he was very penetrating.
Yes.
He was very authoritative.
Yes.
Sometimes I feel like he's speaking like Hitler or Mussolini or somebody with complete conviction. What he's saying is 100% the truth.
Yes.
And you could not argue with that.
No,
so
absolute.
That message come into your heart, even today when you listen or see Prabhupada video, is powerful.
But in his room, anything could happen in his room.
It was very personal.
In Vrindavan, it was 1975, and I'm massaging him before lunch, which means we both have our gumshas on. He's sitting on a straw mat, sometimes legs out, sometimes crossed. And mustard oil on his body, so I do his back, and I go sit on the side. And my legs are crossed, and I'm... pulling on his arm, pulling at his fingers, you know, trying to crack his fingers.
Yeah.
And I can see he's staring at my feet. So this is not a thing you want to go on as his disciple, you know. And I can see he's looking at my feet, really looking. So I kind of tried
put
to pull my gumsha over him, you know. And then he looked at me. He said, your mother, is she beautiful? And me, now I'm like 22 years old. She's like 55. So, of course, I said, well...
Yeah, of course.
Yes, Prabhupada. She was a very pretty lady. And then he goes, he said, because I'm look, you know, he says, I'm looking at your feet. He said, and your feet are very pretty. And they say, if your feet are pretty, it means your mother, she's beautiful. He said, so I wanted to see if it worked.
Yeah.
So that's what it was
actually
like.
Actually, it's a science of anatomy. You know, in Silpa Shastra, they have this when they do sculpture and everything.
Yeah.
So this measurement and stuff. Yeah. And this is normal in India. I mean, the culture people knows many, like Prabhupada explains sometimes, astrology is a science. You know, and there is a science of omen you see in the morning. Mm-hmm. When you see a brahmana or you see a cow, it's auspicious. Things like that.
But it was just so transcendental. I mean, this is not something you would expect, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny because in my book that I wrote, I put that story in there.
1 minute, what's the name of your book?
What is the difficulty?
What's the difficulty?
They're the very first words he said to me.
What's the difficulty?
What is the difficulty? What's he actually yelled at me. It wasn't a pleasant, what is the difficulty? Which we chant, we dance, prasadam. What is the difficulty? But it was different for me.
But was a particular happening that he told you yelled at you?
That was when I first met him in New York.
Okay.
I told you the room was very full.
Yeah.
It was middle of July.
Hot,
humid, hazy, like we have here,
in
Vrindavan.
Sweaty.
Yeah, here we say 45 degrees. So there's 95, sometimes more. And the temple room,
small,
hotter, because it's packed with devotees. There are devotees hanging through the windows from the outside.
So there's no air coming in.
Standing at the door, no air conditioning, no air. Big kirtan going on. And I'm, again, right by the Vyasasan, just the Prabhupada's right. Next to Kirtanananda. That was my spot.
Of course.
So the kirtan ended, and Prabhupada starts chanting, Jai Om Vishnupad. So, of course, now we all have to get down on our hands and knees, which takes up three times as much room.
Yeah, you can't.
So there's literally no room, but you have to do it. There was no standing there with your hands folded in those days. Everybody's down on the ground. And Prabhupada's saying the prayers. And then he finished, so, Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya. And I'm saying it very fast, because I just want to look at him. So when I finished, I sat up, but everybody else is
still
down there. So when I sat up, I sat on the head of a brahmachari behind me, who was still sincerely offering his obeisances. So he didn't care for my bottom being on his head, and he pushed me.
Yeah.
And I literally flew onto the Vyasasan, right across Prabhupada's legs and feet. And that first words he said to me, What is the difficulty? And I shrank back into my seat. But I took that eternal instruction.
Of course.
Everything he did, you could take it on so many levels, everything he would say to you. First instruction I got as his personal servant was, follow me. Which literally, he wanted me to follow him.
Yeah, go with him.
But that's all we do. That's our business, is follow him, you know, life after life, follow him. So whenever he would say something, you could take it very simply, or you could take it in a very profound way.
Yeah.
So tell us about the book. You wrote this book, and this book is available on Amazon, or?
Yeah, it is available on Amazon. And
so
it's available, you know, here, hard copy. It's in the U.S. as well.
Yeah. Here in Mayapur, available in our bookstore.
I hope so.
This should be. Last time you left,
it
should be.
Yeah, I left many copies last time.
Check it out if it's still available.
Yeah.
But if those people who are listening to us, they want to buy your book, they can go to Amazon and write Shrutakirti.
Shrutakirti Das, yes. What is the difficulty? And it's very condensed. It says on there something about from his personal diary, like 140 different.
Of course.
But it's very condensed. There's not a lot of fluff. It's all just personal experience. And mostly it's all very nectarine. You know, devotees like it a lot.
Of course.
And they're all little stories.
Yeah.
So you can just read a story 10, 15 minutes and put it down because you've concluded something.
One story.
But it took me years to get it done.
You took notes when you were Srila Prabhupada?
When I took my notes was 1978. And Satsarup interviewed me in Hawaii. At the time, I was the temple president in Hawaii, and he came interview me for the Lilamrita. So for 3 days, he did interviews, and fortunately, they were all transcribed, and I got, you know, a stack of transcriptions before the big, big fire in Gitanagari, which destroyed all the papers. And I got them in 78, and I didn't even look at them until 1996.
When you wrote the book.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So going down the memory lane and remembering. Yeah. I think also the funny thing is that when you start to write a book, there's some memory which reappear again.
It definitely...
It's something amazing. You know, it's like click, it's a mechanism which link into expand into...
It started out very short.
And yeah.
I literally started out on the internet, AOL, America Online. Because I saw devotees writing, it said Prabhupada Katha. And when I got on to see these files, is all they were doing were fighting about Ritvikism and Sridhar Maharaj and Narayan Maharaj. So I just literally put one sentence on first day, and the next day I put, you know, Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada. So each day, I just got filled. Because I was at 96, I had been outside of the temple for 12 years.
Okay.
I was an hour away from the Philadelphia temple. I had a business, a family. I was dried up.
You were running the garage again?
yeah, more or less, yeah. So I was pretty dried up, but that it changed, you know, my whole experience then. And then after a few months, I would go to work and come home from work each day, and I would write, I would pick out of my, I had lines. I had like over 100 lines. It was, all it took was a few words or a sentence, and I knew what that story
then
was.
Then you remember.
So I would pick whatever I liked. It wasn't chronological.
Yeah.
Whatever I felt inspired, I would put down. And then I started to feel, who am I even to write a book, you know? And then I had a dream. And we were in, Prabhupada was there, Kirtanananda was in the dream, and I was there and a few other devotees, and we were in Atlantic City, which is beach town outside Philadelphia. And we were in a life member's house or something. And I got in late. And Prabhupada's sitting down, like at a life member's, taking prasadam. And there's a half other devotees all taking prasadam. And I'm sitting down now taking prasadam. But they're all done. And I'm not. Which means I can't get up because you got to finish one of the things I learned from Prabhupada. You eat every piece of rice on your plate. So they walked out the door to do Harinam on the boardwalk. And I'm, like, trying to finish my plate of prasadam because, I don't want them to get away. And so I got finished, and then I'm walking down the hallway, can't find my shoes, and I'm all in anxiety. And then finally I got out the door, and I got on the boardwalk, and they're, like, a block ahead. And Prabhupada's part of this kirtan party. And I'm, like, trying to catch up. And he turned around. So they were walking ahead. He turned around and looked at me with a big smile on his face and went, come on. And then I knew I could finish my book. That's when I felt like, okay, this is okay.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. But tell me some of the most intense experience you had with Srila Prabhupada, or something awkward, let's say.
Something
awkward or some intense. Of course, it was always intense to be with a spiritual master, because I know. But in some particular time, you were exposed or you were learning something which you never thought,
I'll tell you my favorite. See, I was with him, like I said, first time I was with him as a brahmachari for 16 months.
Yes.
The first 8 months were easy. Second 8 months started to get more difficult.
Of course.
You know, the senses started pulling on me sometimes. And he's traveling around the world. He's very regulated, which means we were totally not regulated because we had to, you know, follow his regulation. But so sometimes, you know, sleeping, getting up, chanting, all these things.
Prabhupada had no jet lag. Wherever he went, was the time,
it
started. And you were like, boing, going to sleep for 5 hours.
I have Paramahamsa Swami with me, was his secretary. You know, that was my second time. First time, 16 months. Then I was away for 8 months. During those 8 months, Satsarup Maharaj was his servant. Prabhupada decided he wanted a sannyasi to be a servant because he kept losing his brahmacharis.
Yeah.
So he thought, I'll make sannyasi my servant. But then after 6 months, Satsarup wanted...
They didn't last.
Because it's not easy being with pure devotee. It's not a simple thing. Very wonderful, very ecstatic. But you don't get ecstasy without the tapasya, you know, without the problems. Yeah. You know, like they said, with his spiritual life and comfort. They don't go hand in hand.
Together, no. Yeah.
So it was really wonderful. So anyway, we're flying, and we wound up in Australia, which means 15-hour flight from Delhi or whatever, changing planes in Sydney, and then you get there. So by the time we went from there after a few days, we went to Fiji.
Mm.
So we get to Fiji, and of course it's after breakfast. So we're knocked out in the other room, myself, secretary, Sanskrit editor. We're just, you know. And I hear the bell ring. And this happened a dozen times in 2 years. So I go in and, you know, I'm mode of ignorance. I'm offering obeisances and I'm trying to exercise my eyelids so that I don't look like I'm sleeping. But even while I'm down on the ground, Prabhupada's yelling. Ringing the bell for hours. Always said hours. It was never a few minutes. It was always hours. I say because he had a different time frame, you know, like Lord Brahma, you know, like one day is so Prabhupada was hours. And he said, you know, why are you sleeping? He knew we were sleeping. He always knew everything. And see, again, I was clever. I was smart. I never gave an excuse. Worst thing you could do is give it. If you give an excuse, you're going to really chop your head. You know, then he's going to reduce you to dust in front of him. So I would just look at him, you know. And then he said, you know, he said, everyone's working. He said, all the karmis. He would say karmis. Like we would say karmis. He said karmis. Same way. He said, all the karmis are working hard. He said, take care of their families, working hard for their sex life. And then he'd say, but not the devotees, all sleeping very comfortably, you know. And you just have to take it, you know. And then he said, where's Paramahamsa? That's his sannyas secretary. And I go, oh, man. And generally, when Prabhupada, whenever he said, where's somebody, it's to chastise them. That's what it's. And we'd get happy because it meant he's not chastising me. He's gonna chastise
somebody else.
So it was like, so we'd revel in it, you know. But this time I knew this wasn't going to go good. I just knew it. So I went into the room and I said, Prabhupada wants to see a Parma. And he's really mad, you know. And he's, again, you know, we're tamagun, mode of ignorance. So now we both go back. I was a glutton for
company.
Punishment. I always would go back in the room, you know, because that was my life. You know, that's what I did. And Prabhupada looks at Paramahamsa and said, why are you sleeping? And he said the word. He said, oh, Prabhupada, I have jet lag. And I thought, oh, my God.
That's like, the worst thing you can say. I can't believe he said.
And Prabhupada looked at him. He said, jet lag? He said, you're a sannyasi. He said, your business is eating less, sleeping less. He said, you have no business. I mean, Prabhupada was heavy.
Heavy.
You know, my book is all sweetness, but he was, you know, there was another side, chastised. He said, that's your business, you know? And then he would add insult to injury and say, go on, go back and sleep. You know, go sleep. And then you'd go back, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. There you wouldn't sleep forever after that, you know? So there's, you know, he was our father. He was all our father, but he was literally...
instructing us.
Yeah, he was instructing, chastising. He tried to protect us from falling down. It was always to try to protect us from the worst possible thing because he didn't like to change. You know, I was one of 12 servants, you know, in 11 years. In my 2.5 years, I was, they always say, the longest running. Yeah. So, you know, but it's nothing to be proud of because still... you know, there came a time when it just...
You got married eventually.
Yeah.
No, you were telling
me. Well, I was with him after I was married.
Okay.
when I was with him here in Mayapur when my wife had a child.
Wow. And I believe Prabhupada gives some gift to your wife.
Yeah, she was in Los Angeles, and I get a telegram. Your wife just had a baby, 4:15 a.m., which was Mangal Arti time here in those days. So, of course, I was 23 years old. I ran into Prabhupada's room, you know. I said, you know, giddy, you know. My wife had a baby, Prabhupada. He's very nice, you know. And he said, you can call him Mayapur Chandra.
Wow.
And then he said, you won't find that name anywhere, he said, in Shastra. He said, I made it up. When the name came. He said, you'll find Navadvip Chandra, Nader Nimai Pandit. He said, but this Mayapur Chandra you won't find. He said, I've made it up. And then he had me get a Bengali boy, Brahmachari, sent him to Navadvip. Prabhupada gave him a bunch of rupees, and he came back with silver
bracelets
and ankle bells for his feet. So, again, we were his. He was our temple president. He was our treasurer. He was a temple commander. And
but
he
yet,
was,
yet he was like a father or grandfather. I mean, somebody who loves you.
Yeah.
Who will give you this gift if your father, maybe your father, your grandfather. Maybe, maybe not. Nowadays, no, I don't know.
No, but, it was.
But he was.
He took care of, us. I mean, he looked at, and he knew.
I mean, you could say, oh, he's a spiritual leader. He's spending money for my wife, my kid, you know. But no. The thing is that he was very personal.
Very personal.
Out of love. And that name he gave to your daughter is the name of this temple.
Yeah.
Mayapur Chandra.
Yeah.
Which people will come from all over the universe and the world
and,
to see.
So that was, you know, the life with him. So it was very wonderful. You know, he was very caring. But he also had a duty to us. In Juhu, went coming down the stairs for his morning walk. And there's 20 devotees there at the time. So everybody plops down on the ground. And one boy stood there with his hands folded. Stood, didn't offer obeisance. He stood with his hands folded. And Prabhupada just kept walking. And he just turned to me and said, that's the beginning of his fall down.
Krishna.
So see, from him you learned how everything is important. See, Prabhupada would use this most important. You know, we throw that around so much, you know, distributing books was most important. And again, Satsup wrote him, Prabhupada, should I stop? I'm doing this college preaching. Maybe I should stop and just distribute books. And Prabhupada was like, that's also most important.
Everything was
deity worship most important. So he used English in his own way. It didn't mean anything else was less important.
No.
Everything was most important. Everything's important.
Yeah.
And the other, I learned it, everything personal.
He had a lot of common sense as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could go to Prabhupada, I heard different story and say something funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like when the body say, oh, I need $4, I want to commit suicide somewhere in New York. And Prabhupada look at him, you don't need $4, you need only $1. $1 is 4 gallon or 8 gallon. Why you need $4? You want to be a Maya, got lost. I mean,
yeah.
It was not to be taken around for cheap.
No.
It was not to be playing around. Or sometimes used to walk in New York and there were all kind of people and say, Prabhupada, maybe you should not walk in this road. I've seen worse. I'm
we
a Calcutta
that,
man.
The one was he was walking in Germany, the Schloss. So that was the, you know, farm country.
Yes.
So they're on a morning walk and Prabhupada's walking. He has his cane and he's walking through the fields. And they get to one spot and the devotee says, Prabhupada, we should go this way. And Prabhupada said, why? He said, well, that's wheat, and today's Ekadasi. And if we walk through there, we will be breathing in the grains. It's
extreme devotion.
And Prabhupada said, don't, pointed his cane in his face, and don't be a fanatic. I was telling Tiki yesterday, one of the first things Prabhupada did was break down. I was never a fanatic. I've always been fanatically not fanatic. But the first thing he did was cooking. So we're in the Dallas temple. He has his own flat there, his own apartment, his own kitchen, nice kitchen. So the first 3 days I'm with him, he shows me how to use the cooker and how to give a massage at the same time. I'm literally giving him a massage on the kitchen floor. Sometimes he grabs my leg, say like this. Can you imagine somebody, what to speak of him grabbing your leg and squeezing it? And the cooker's on the stove. He showed me how to, but he showed me how to set up the cooker. And he didn't waste time, you know. He cut up the vegetables. So he's doing that, and he tells me, wash the rice. So the cooker had a container in the top. You would put the rice in, and it steamed in the top of the cooker. So I'm there, and I put water in there, and I'm washing it around, cleaning it, you know, and I pour it out slowly. Then I put water again. Now, he's like 5-6 feet away cutting vegetables.
I can see you.
But he's watching me. You know, he sees every... So I start doing that again, and I just start to turn it. And he said, what are you doing?
Why are you washing twice?
I said, I'm washing the rice 3 times, which is what I learned. He said, once is enough. So that was the first time he broke down my so-called, you know, everything's like this, you know. But he did it again and again in different ways. Because he knew also, you know, with other people, it could be very different. With Jamuna, every 5 minutes, he'd wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. But me, it was the exact opposite. He's like,
no problem,
you know, this
do
goofy
it.
Kid, he, you know. So he knew how to deal with all
with
of
people,
us. It wasn't
yeah.
one, like Ayurvedic medicine. No. There's no one size fits no. all. Everyone's an individual.
I had one funny story when he was in Hawaii. They gave milk in the night, and there was no sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And the temple president, you go, where is the sugar? So the servant goes there. I don't know if it was you. Was you?
Yes. Yeah,
okay, you tell the story.
Laguna Beach.
Yeah, you tell the
Laguna
story.
Laguna Beach was definitely like the health
New
conscious.
Health conscious.
They were eating sprouts. The whole temple was like that, you know. And Prabhupada was very much not like that.
No.
So
it was traditional type of.
Is what happened. See, again, Prabhupada knew. He knew everything. So he says, I'll have my milk. Every night he had milk, hot milk.
Yeah.
Didn't ask where it came from, just hot milk.
Just give me the milk.
Just give me his milk. And he says to me, with sugar. He never said with sugar.
Because he always put it in sugar.
Because he knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So he said with sugar. So, of course, I heat up the milk, which means you got to boil it.
Yeah.
Foams. Got to be super hot when you bring it to him. And I'm there. You know, I'm looking, where's the sugar? And the kitchen, we don't use sugar. You know, poison, you know, it's like worse. They would say worse than heroin back then, right? Sugar, you know, it's like, yeah.
So then?
So we don't have sugar.
So then you go
I said, well, we got honey. I said, oh, so I put a little. So I go in and I said, Prabhupada, I said, it has honey. I said, they don't have sugar here. And he said, what do you mean they don't have sugar? I said, well, they don't use sugar. He said, Krishna likes sugar. He said, they do what they want, but you have to give sugar to Krishna. You know, we see all these things going on. This ahimsa, you know, no dairy.
No cheese.
Got to have milk.
Yeah.
3 meals a day he had dairy. And it could have been from Meadow Gold in Los Angeles, vitamin D, fish oil.
From what say, no. Okay,
he said it's Kali Yuga. Everything is contaminated. When they said the sugar is filtered through
bones.
Cow bone ash, it's Kali Yuga. That's why we offer to Krishna.
It purifies everything. We don't have to
Our
be
business
fanatic.
Was chant Hare Krishna, follow his instructions, and preach. That was it. That was it. Everything else is your concoction. Yeah.
Amazing. You know?
Yeah.
What a fortune you had to be with Srila Prabhupada. And what a fortune we have you with us. And you are telling us a story so that people can in the future understand this great personality.
We try.
You know?
I try.
It's difficult to understand such a personality. Yeah. Because like Prabhupada say of his guru, he was a Vaikuntha man.
Yeah.
And similarly, Prabhupada was a Vaikuntha man.
So
he was no ordinary person.
Prabhupada said I had good common sense. Because whenever he asked me a question, my opinion, and I never gave, I would say, you'll do like, you know, first time was in Calcutta. So he had just been ill. This was 1973. He had been very ill. So he gets two letters on the same day, one from Mudded Visa saying, come to Perth, Australia. We have a nice cottage by the beach. You can rest there, recuperate. Sunny. And he gets a letter from Shyama Sundar saying, come to England. We're going to have Rath Yatra this year. Three carts going down, you know, the main drag to Nelson's
Trafalgar Square.
Trafalgar Square.
Yeah.
So Prabhupada called in all the big guns then. It was Tamal and Gargamuni and Bhavananda and his sannyasis. And he calls them all in before his massage, lunchtime. And he tells them, I have this letter says this and I have this letter.
What shall I do?
He said, so I want you all to discuss. He said, and I'll call you back after lunch and tell me what you consider I should do. So they left. So then Prabhupada says, okay, massage. So I'm massaging his back. So he says to me, so Shrutakirti, what is your opinion? You know, should I go to Australia? Now imagine me, I would have loved to go to the beach in Australia.
Of course,
you know, I would have said, let's go to the beach, you know, and body surf. And he said, what is your opinion? And I just smiled. I said, Prabhupada, I said, you're going to go to England because you have
like
an opportunity
the
to preach to thousands of people. And then he said, you have good understanding. You have common sense, he said. So then he has his lunch. He takes a short nap, and he says, call them. That's all, you know, it was simple. Call them. So I call them. We're all sitting down. And Prabhupada looks, and of course it was Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He was always the spokesperson.
Yeah.
So he looks, and Prabhupada says, so what have you decided? And he said, Prabhupada, you should go to Australia and rest. And Prabhupada just shook his head, you know, like, he wanted so much that, you know, that's what he said, do as I'm doing, was he said so many times, do as I'm doing, not what you want to do. You know, and I hear that sometimes, people, you know, my opinion, somebody said that in a recent thing I was doing, one of the big, and I specifically wrote, I said, well, I really don't have any opinion. I said, but Prabhupada's instruction is like this, that's our... We
preaching
don't have
is the
opinions.
Essence.
Yeah.
Preaching is the essence.
Yeah.
Above everything else.
Yeah. If you have your own opinion and it's different, then you're of no value. So that much I knew. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing this.
And he did that 2 years later in Delhi. We can go to Kurukshetra, he said. You know, and 4 hours in the car back and forth and this and that. He said, or I don't go. And he said the same thing, call them in. And it was practically the same group.
Same people.
And the same thing happened. And he asked me again. I said, Prabhupada, you're going to go preach.
Yeah, of course.
You know, that's why he came here. He didn't come here to sit
just
on the
relax.
Beach. You know? He came here to preach, and that's what he did every day until he left. You know, that was his business. And that should be our business. You know, if we want to please him, everybody, give me blessings. That's all you hear in India. Give me your blessings. You know, blessings, you know. Please, Prabhupada, you'll get all the blessings any of us can get. You know, do something for him. Do something positive.
Take some responsibility for this moment and then some portion of it, whether you're a cook or you're doing this or that. Take that very responsible.
He said that in Juhu once. When an Indian man raised his hand, Prabhupada gave a class, and he said, you know, please give me your blessings. Prabhupada looked at him. He said, you want my blessings? He said, every day I have a headache. Every day. He said, you take my headache. He said, then you can get my blessings.
That means go and preach and take some responsibility.
You know, devotees, we would ask him, you know, in Atlanta they asked him, you know, how can we please you the most? It was Sankirtan, book distributor. And, of course, they think Prabhupada's going to say, you distribute my books. But Prabhupada said, develop your love of Krishna. But then when the GBC asked, how can I please you? He said, you take responsibility, you know. So he would...
Accordingly, you know, he will give instructions.
Yeah. Just because he said something to one person doesn't mean it was for you. You know, he talked to individuals.
I think, you know, sometimes it's a mistake they put all this letter together. And people become confused because he told somebody, you get married, tell somebody, take sannyas, he told somebody, go here, somebody go there, so people think. But they don't understand. They should have was personally instructing that person in that particular time and space.
Yes.
He was giving the best solution for him.
Yeah.
So, which is not what you wrote in his book, I think.
Yeah.
That would stand for 10,000 years.
Yes.
That's my...
There are some letters where he specifically says everyone should do like... But they're very...
Very rare.
Rare. There's only a few. Rare. Some.
Yeah.
Many pertaining to deity worship. Things like that. You just say, this is, you know, what should be done.
Also because these are very personal letters. I mean, somebody write to you and I'll tell something. It's not to be for the public, what they will understand. But anyway, so I'm so thankful and so inspired to be today with you. If I would ask you a few questions, like I'll ask most of the time, if you would go back in time when you were 10, 15 years, what would you do?
10, 15 years?
Yeah, so when you were a small, young child.
I could go back.
What would you change in your life?
I would have never left his service. Realize two more years is all I had to do. Of course, fortunately, Hari Sari got in there and he recorded so many things. I didn't have that facility. We had a reel-to-reel tape recorder and very few reels of tape.
Those big ones.
So at that time, we recorded what we could. But by the time 76 rolled around, they popped a cassette tape in. Every time Prabhupada said something, it was recorded.
Nice.
But, my so many regrets. My big, big regret is I left him. You know, he didn't send me away. Very much the opposite. He told me, I don't like to change my servants. It was my choice. You know?
Why did you choose to go? I mean, Maya illusion, or there was something important in your life?
I was married. I had a child that I had never even been with. The child was already 8 months old, and I literally didn't even know who he was.
So you wanted to spend some time with
him? I wanted to stay with family. But it was in Hawaii. And I went into Prabhupada's room. Of course, I was very embarrassed, ashamed, and what would you say, chicken?
Yeah.
To say anything.
Become small.
But I went into the room and I said, I told him I wanted to leave this service. And I said I wanted to preach, which was a lie, you know. But what else could you say? And he looked at me. He said, my preaching's not good enough. Yeah. Prabhupada knew, I'm telling you. He knew how to cut
you. You cannot tell lies, Prabhupada.
No, you couldn't. You can't. That's the worst thing you could do, was tell a lie.
No.
So then he made me come clean, you know, and I said, Prabhupada, I just, you know, want to stay here in Hawaii, be with my family. And again, he looked at me and he said, I don't like to change my servants.
So that means he gave you opportunity to continue if you wanted
always.
To.
But and he also didn't give orders.
He didn't say, you should not do it, then it becomes offense.
Then it's a big offense. It's already an offense, but not as big as if he says, you stay,
and you're going to say no.
Then your spiritual life is over. So he would say things in a way, at least with me all the time.
Not damaging to the
person. He never said, you should do this. I was with him as a brahmachari. So now it's probably 10 months, and we're in Los Angeles. So every day I bring his lunch in, put it down on a little chokey, the table against the wall. He'd sit on a little straw mat in front of it. So I put it down. I'm offering obeisances. While I'm offering obeisances, he said, being a brahmachari is an austerity. Being a grahasta is an austerity. He said, you just have to decide which austerity you want. And then he started eating. He was done. He was prasadam there. And I left. 24 hours later, I put the plate down on his table. I'm offering obeisances. He said it was more difficult managing my family than it is managing ISKCON.
Of course.
So he's telling me, just stay in your saffron, bite the bullet, do what you got to do, but you don't want to get married. Because I saw what it was like managing ISKCON. It wasn't easy. But he's saying married life, he said, was more difficult. So he's telling me, and I saw that again and again. He would tell me things. I never even knew he was talking to me. I thought he was just saying things. But he was telling me what you should do. It wasn't until I really started writing the book, you know, 20 years later that I realized he was trying his best to keep me from going away, you know, keep me from falling down, to keep me having this service. And, you know, Frank, I was good at it. again, because I didn't have a father. I was a good servant. I took orders, never asked questions. He said, first-class servant. He knows what to do without being asked.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what,
you would do.
That's what I did. He would give signals just by looking. You know, you'd do that, meant turn the fan on. He'd look in Vrindavan, he would look at the windows. It meant open up the curtains. He didn't go through a whole, could you do that? No, he just looked at you.
And then you understand.
And you knew what to do.
I think you're tuning to the person in your mind. Tell me an occasion where you saw Srila Prabhupada really angry or cursing somebody I'm sure you have seen Prabhupada.
There are a few times.
And there are people where you feel like you're becoming small and disappear under the table or something.
Yeah, I was in the room a few times.
Not with you, maybe.
No, it wasn't with me. Yeah. He yelled at me, but it was, basic things. That was definitely devastating. And that's what I say. See, I was raised again. My mother never raised her voice.
Never.
And I didn't have a father. So I grew up in a very calm, quiet, peaceful environment.
Plus your two sisters, they were
two
elder than you.
Sisters,
they took care of you.
Everybody was on their own. Everybody, we were all very individual, And so when Prabhupada would yell at me, it really, really affected me because I never got yelled at, And he knew that.
But you saw Prabhupada angry sometimes.
But 2.5 years, he yelled at me 4 times.
Apart from you, let's say somebody, you got in somebody's personal, this is wrong. And you saw that Prabhupada was really upset.
One of his sannyasis who had left, Devananda Maharaj. Mm-hmm. So he came, Prabhupada was in India. And I think it was in Delhi. So he came into the room. Brahmananda was Prabhupada's secretary. And so Devananda comes into the room, and I'm sitting next to him, and he's wearing this bright red cloth, like a Shaivite, And
Devananda.
Yeah, big beard and long hair. And Prabhupada's trying to talk to him. Devananda's doing all these mudras and things, I didn't even know what he was doing. But he's doing all these hand gestures and everything, And Prabhupada kept trying to talk to him, and finally, Prabhupada just turned. I call it his Nrsingha form. His eyes get red, shake. He would shake, and he called for Brahmananda. Brahmananda
Big,
was his. He said,
huge.
Take him out of here. That time he didn't even have to yell. He just said, but get him out of here. He removed him.
He was drugged or something?
Yeah, he was intoxicated. The other big one we all, if we know ISKCON history, we know about was Nitai. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada said, if Nitai, he said, he has the nerve to ask me for a guru. He said, he doesn't think I'm qualified. But he asked me to find him a guru that's qualified. He said, such a rascal. So, and that's what Nitai
very
did.
Offensive.
Again, Sanskrit scholars, So many of them just went
disappear.
Down. Because they would see Prabhupada's translations and they would see the word for word and they're thinking, well, that's not. Prabhupada gave very specific devotional bhakti translations of everything for us. And theirs was just a dry word for word, whether
Sanskrit.
So Prabhupada didn't do that.
Plus, Prabhupada took always, reference to other acharyas.
Always commentaries.
Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, example.
That was that books. Green Bhagavatam, one for each canto. They traveled with him around the world, so he would always give commentaries, and then he would take it, digest it, and give us what we could understand.
Now it's been translated by His Holiness Banaswamy. So sometimes when we give lecture, we can open and see. And we can see Prabhupada took that inspiration from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur.
Yeah.
Which was very deep.
Yeah. We're on 10th canto in Vrindavan now. We're still doing 10th canto. We're somewhere in the 50th chapter. Of course, Prabhupada stopped in, 34? Chapter 36 or 34. And but if I ever give class, I'll go to Krishna book, where it has Prabhupada's commentaries on those particular chapters. Because otherwise, what do we know? What can we say? What do I know?
Shruti K. Prabhu, it's a great pleasure talking to you. Our time is coming to close. Give a message to the people who are listening to us today. Mm. What's your ultimate nectarian message which everybody will take in their heart and they will progress in spiritual life?
It's very important to do our best to understand Prabhupada. I was saying to a devotee today, you know, we talk about kirtan now and this and how much it's changed. And they say, well, you know, we danced like this in front of Prabhupada and we chanted like this in front of Prabhupada. So Prabhupada had a guideline. He would say something once, twice, three times. If you don't get it, he stopped saying it. Yeah, I said, because just because he allowed something doesn't mean it's what he wanted. Like here in Mayapur, in the room, he called me in. You know, he said, they can chant their Nittai Gaur Hari bowls. I'll chant Hare Krishna, go back home, back to Godhead. You know, in Vrindavan, Radhe, Radhe. Prabhupada never said Radhe, Radhe. So my conclusion is all we can do is follow him. And if we think we're going to get somewhere else by doing something else or somewhere else, you're finished. Like Prabhupada said about Nittai, when he said, will you, you know, give me, Prabhupada said, you have my blessings to go to hell. So I don't want those kind of blessings, you know. We may not be able to follow everything this way, that way, but we should always understand what we should do, the principles of what we should do.
To remain firm to the instruction that Srila Prabhupada gives us.
Prabhupada, you have time for one little story?
Sure.
2.5 years with him. I asked him one question when I was with him for just a week or two. And it was we were in Thailand. And Burajan was there. And Prabhupada was headed to India, to Vrindavan for Kartik, bringing all his Western devotees, who we weren't accepted by anyone. Now, in Vrindavan, they would take our rupees, but they made us put it on the table. They wouldn't even touch
it. I know.
We were such maleches. But our money was okay. So anyway, Prabhupada's on his way there. And he says to Burajan, he said, so we're headed to Vrindavan. He said, so we've been successful because I've allowed women into the temple. He said, but my godbrothers, they criticize me for doing that, he said. But our success is because of that. He said, and if you go to Mayapur, he said, when they have festivals, he said, who goes to the temple? Bunch of widows in white, he said. So only women are going to the temple, like we even see in so many women, you know, outnumber the men so much. Women, old women, all the time. It hasn't changed much.
Yes.
So he said, but they criticize me. He said, but I made that adjustment. He said, and we've been successful. I'm behind him. I'm massaging him. And something came over me, and I said, Prabhupada, how do we know the difference between changing a principle and making an adjustment?
Yeah, that's important.
That's a good question, right?
Good question.
And it got really quiet. And then finally Prabhupada said, that requires a little intelligence. But that required Prabhupada, you know, to be a purity, a pure devotee. He said to me once, I was giving him massage at nighttime. That was the blissful time. He would talk about his childhood, his mother, his father, all these things he would talk about. And he told the story. I'm literally on his bed under a mosquito net. So I couldn't be next to the bed. I was in bed with him. Couldn't ask for anything more, you know, sitting there. And he starts telling stories. And he said, my mother, he said, one night, I told her I want puris. And she said, no, no, too late. I'll make you muri, puffed rice. And Prabhupada was not one to, you know, accept. He said, I want puris. And again, his mother said, no,
it's too late.
You're going to be bad for you. And so for the third time, our little Prabhupada, young boy, said, I want puris. He said, then my father said, if he wants puris, give him puris. And then Prabhupada said, perhaps my father knew. And that then he didn't say anything else. So he would give you these little
glimpses.
So you know what that means? Little yes. glimpses. Perhaps his father knew. He was the person, Prabhupada, most empowered person to think you're going to find something better somewhere else. What a nonsense you are. What a rascal you are. You know, whatever is our future, we go to heaven, we go to hell. My point is you just follow Prabhupada and you're protected. You're under his umbrella. You're in his bubble, protected by him. But as soon as you step outside, like a hurricane,
yes.
the eye of the storm, it's sunny, no wind. As soon as you step outside, is the most
gone.
The most severe winds are right outside that point. So that's our life. Wonderful. Whatever we can do, just try to do it for Prabhupada, and your future is bright.
And Prabhupada say, I live in my books. So we should never forget that if we read Prabhupada's books, mm-hmm. we are with him, and we can understand him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to have a little intelligence to understand that.
Yes
this is what Prabhupada wants me to do. Thank you so much
Thank
coming
you.
Today Gong here to Radio Mayapur. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
And entertainment also.
Jai.
Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai. Mayapur Dham ki jai. Gaur Premanande.
Hari Hari.
You're listening to Radio Mayapur with the best devotional, meditation, kirtan music, and inspirational podcast. This is Radio Mayapur.